Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So super exciting guest that we have with us today. You know, we're going to be talking about the building, the scaling, you know, all the good stuff that we like to hear, you know, when we're doing these types of episodes. And in this case, you know, we're going to be talking about spin-offs as well as raising money. So again, brace yourself for a very inspiring conversation today. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest, Barney Bamforth. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alejandro. I'm happy to be here with you today.
So originally born in the Southwest there in England. Give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I was born and raised in the Southwest of the UK in really quite a rural area. My parents ran their own small business in the area and made a lot of sacrifices for us as children. And really, they taught me a huge amount about both about the importance of calculated risk-taking and the importance of the pursuit of what you find meaningful. So I guess that really then became a big part of what has driven me through the years. Like many in my generation, I was told frequently that if you work hard and you do well, then you can do anything you want with your life. And in some ways, I think that's inspirational, but in other ways, it also presents a challenge in that, you know, it opens the world to you and really makes it difficult to really focus down on what you really do want to do. So I think, you know, following my childhood there in the southwest of the UK, a lot of the following years for me were really formational in understanding then what I really did find important in life and what I wanted to then focus on.
Out of all things, how did you get into physics?
I was always a lover of science. I like learning new things. I'm someone who, if I'm not learning new things, I get bored very quickly. And I found the sciences just truly fascinating and you know, trying to expand on our understanding of the world in front of us. So I pursued physics as my undergraduate degree. I went to the University of Oxford to do my undergraduate and master's. And then after completing my degree there, I moved here to where I'm now based in Cambridge. I'm in the UK to pursue a PhD in quantum computing at the time.
So I know that moving to Cambridge was a really big deal. It was pivotal, no, when you went there to study your PhD. But how was it like moving there, you know, and also what kind of doors has that opened over the course of time?
So yes, absolutely. I mean, moving to Cambridge was pivotal for me and my life. And I think then as I did my studies and my PhD, it really opened my eyes to what I really do love. And for me, that is, I mean, yes, discovery, but I think kind of the academic world did not really appeal to me. But what I found was a real love of the development of technologies that can impact humanity. And I'm definitely someone who likes to see that impact and how that can really materialize. And I guess during my PhD, I was working on new technologies, but the frustration I had was that the impact we saw was always 10 years away. No matter how much progress we made with that technology development, everyone would always say, in 10 years' time, this will be enormously impactful. And I got a little bit disillusioned with that. And that was really what drove me after my PhD completed to pursue a career in industry. But I would say that the training I had and what I learned and the connections I made during that time were extremely valuable for me and really opened my eyes to a lot of the possibilities. And Cambridge is probably the best place in the UK to work on new technologies. There's a fantastic kind of academic environment here, obviously, but there is also a very kind of entrepreneurial scene in Cambridge and a lot of exciting developments in the private sector.
Let's talk about you getting into the private sector, because Cosworth was, you know, your first day of rodeo into the, you know, working life as an engineer. So how was that for you? Because you were there for about 1 year and a half before you actually made the move to what ended up being a mega, mega, you know, pivotal moment in your career with Base4, which actually was your segue into becoming an entrepreneur. But how was it like getting into Cosworth and then making a move just 1 year and a half, you know, into something new?
So as I said, I wanted to find a position in industry. I wanted to find something that was interesting for me, and I wanted to make sure I used some of the skills that I had learned. So again, this was a very kind of engineering technical focus. So I worked for that 18 months or so as a software developer, writing engine control software for motorsport, for rally cars. And it did teach me a lot, but ultimately I knew I wanted to work on more kind of foundational technology. And so I was approached in 2009 by the founder and CEO of a very early stage startup company here in Cambridge. And this company at the time was just two people and an idea for a novel technology that could be used to sequence DNA. And I found that incredibly exciting. It was a field that I had not had a lot of exposure to, where I saw an enormous opportunity to learn, but also it was a role where initially I knew I could use a lot of the skills I developed through my PhD and my subsequent work. So I joined that company in late 2009, and really, you know, that exposed me to this amazing world, this world of startups, this world of technology development, this world of genomics. And the, you know, I was hooked immediately. You know, the excitement of working on these new technologies, the risk. I like the risk of being in the startup world. I think, you know, in hindsight, I didn't appreciate at the time quite how risky it was to make that leap into a company that was really at that very, very early stage. But it really, it allowed me to learn what it takes to build a complex multidisciplinary team, to build new technologies, to build companies, and to do that in a way that that can scale. And so over time, we built that company, Base 4, from those three people, and when I joined, up to a peak of about 45 people. And during that period, we raised several tens of millions in venture capital investment. We built a platform of technologies that were just like nothing anyone has ever seen before. And my role over that time evolved from a very hands-on technical role through project leadership and operational management. And then ultimately, I became the chief operating officer and I sat on the board of directors. And again, that really, you know, I was leading all of the kind of operational management there, and it exposed me to all of the complexity of running an increasingly complex organization. And that I really loved. And so, you know, that I think has really formed a lot of how I think about business now, and really was, yeah, very foundational for me and in giving me the skills I need now in my current role.
So let's talk about Base 4 as well. That moment where, you know, you are working at Base, you know, now for about 10 years. I mean, when you joined there, you know, there was about two people, and you were part of that incredible rocket ship all the way to 40 plus. But after 9 years, there was a certain sequence of events that happened that led you guys to really understand what else was possible. And also perhaps that there was a moment for a change needed, and perhaps even a pivot or even a spin-off, which was the segue into Biofidelity. So walk us through what happened, you know, during that time there.
So at Base 4, we were developing this kind of DNA sequencing technology platform. And, you know, everything we developed was new, and we had this huge suite of technology. And we actually, you know, we were one of a very small handful of companies that have ever actually successfully developed a DNA sequencing platform that can actually sequence DNA. And we had a prototype in our laboratory that was functional, and we published some great data. But at the time, this was in about 2017, the capital markets had kind of shifted focus slightly away from platform development in the genomics field and much more into the applications of genomics. And the reality is it's an incredibly capital intensive field. And we look at companies that are launching DNA sequencing platforms now, and they have raised between 500 million to 2 billion in private investment even prior to market launch. And so the question for us was, you know, is there a viable path to raise that level of capital in the UK and with the platform that we had and with the markets in the condition they were? And, you know, realistically, we saw that as incredibly high risk. And so my CEO at the time, Cameron, he looked at the technologies that we had and saw this obvious opportunity that we had all of these technologies, and surely there were other applications that we could target with these technologies. And so that really led to us doing, I guess, a lot more of an in-depth analysis of the genomics market trying to understand where there were gaps, where there were unmet needs. And we were having a lot of conversations with the big pharmaceutical developers, the big diagnostics companies, with oncologists. And it really made us aware of a couple of different gaps in the market. And so we looked at the technologies that we'd been developing, and we realized that actually we had solutions to some really fundamental problems in our space. And so we took the decision at the time to start up a couple of small projects in the company, and then ultimately to split the company into three. So with the support of our shareholders, we took Base4, the original company, and we actually spun out two new startup companies. So we have, I guess, two sister companies here in Cambridge, one of which took the kind of instrumentation hardware that we'd been developing and deployed it into pharmaceutical discovery workflows. And the other, BioFidelity, took our molecular biology that we've been developing and started to deploy that molecular biology into the cancer diagnostic space. And so the problem that we had been made aware of was that the pharmaceutical companies over the last 20 years have invested more than $100 billion in the development of what are called targeted therapies. And these are cancer treatments that only work on a small fraction of patients, and they target specific mutations in the patient's genome. And these can be incredibly impactful. They can extend survival times in cancer by as much as tenfold, but they only benefit the patients who have those mutations. And so there is a need for testing of all patients to identify which patient will respond to which treatment. And that sounds really obvious. And it has been actually in the treatment guidelines for more than 10 years now that patients should receive this kind of testing. But if you look globally, fewer than 20% of patients actually receive the recommended testing before they're treated. And that has enormous consequences. It means that, well, fewer than 20% of patients are actually benefiting from modern medicine. It means that the market for these new drugs that the pharmaceutical companies develop is really poorly accessed. And it means ultimately that, you know, survival and outcomes in cancer are not improving as quickly as they should do. So there is this gap now between therapeutics and diagnostics, which we see the opportunity to fill. So that was why we founded BioFidelity. We saw that opportunity. We saw this phenomenally well-defined problem. And I think if there's one thing I have learned over the past 15 years of working in building startups, is that the importance of a well-defined problem and the importance of developing a solution to a problem rather than developing a solution and then going and looking for the problem. And that really gave us that opportunity. So we founded BioFidelity in early 2019 with that as our mission, is to try and solve this just appalling lack of access to genomic testing in oncology.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So then let's talk about what you guys are doing at BioFidelity.
You know, how was that moment of the company being set up, being a spin-off, you taking scientists, you know, to get three scientists to get going? What were those early days like?
So we were, I think, very fortunate in that we had a lot of support from our shareholders in the process of setting up the company. So there was obviously a lot of kind of operational and legal complexity in setting up a new company as a spin out, kind of taking intellectual property with us into that new company. But that was a process that we went through over a period of months. And then we set up the company with myself as the CEO. I was asked by the shareholders to take on that role, and with about three of the scientists from Base 4 who came with me into BioFidelity to start developing the technology. And so we worked through 2019 to kind of develop the underlying technology, the concept that we had come up with. And that was incredibly successful. So, you know, it has been at that stage a very technically kind of technology focused business. And then I guess what's been exciting for me is to see, you know, both myself and the team really grow as the company grows. So I think the importance of, you know, evolution of people over time as you grow the company just cannot be underestimated. And so we've now scaled BioFidelity over the past 5 years to about 75 people. We have built our technology. We have built actually a clinical diagnostic testing laboratory in the United States from an empty shell. We've built all of the product development processes that we need in order to build a clinical diagnostic product. We've established a manufacturing facility here in Cambridge in the UK, and we've actually launched our first products into the US market. So with all of that in place, you know, that has required obviously enormous scaling of all of our processes and structure in the organization, but also a lot of development of people. And I think, you know, one of the most important things for us over the years has been making sure that we have the right team at the right time as the company has grown.
So tell us about the what ended up being the business model with BioFidelity. How are you guys making money there?
So one of the challenges that we see in our industry, and one of the reasons why many patients don't have access to the testing that's recommended, is that the current methods for doing this are incredibly complex, and they cost millions of dollars to set up in a clinical laboratory. So that has resulted in a few very large laboratories offering this kind of testing, which fundamentally runs against all the dynamics of healthcare system, because the laboratories that actually have ownership of a patient sample, they want to analyze it, they want to do the testing. And so the mission for us is kind of ultimately, how do we enable the laboratories that own the sample to run the testing themselves, rather than sending it to a big centralized lab and losing, you know, all of the opportunity to both deliver better results more quickly, but also to retain some of the revenue of running that testing. So what we have developed is a technology that allows us to do highly complex genomic testing, but on existing PCR instruments. So these are the same kind of simple bits of hardware that are used for COVID diagnostics. And there are labs worldwide with hundreds of these instruments in them. And what we do now is we build essentially a box of reagents that can be used on those instruments. And so the long-term model for us is to enable labs globally, everywhere around the world, to run this kind of testing in a way that is simple to adopt, much lower cost, much more reliable, and can be run, you know, locally near the patient, so that those laboratories can retain some of the value of running this kind of testing. So that's where we're ultimately heading. I mentioned we've built our own clinical testing laboratory. So we do have our own clinical lab in North Carolina in the United States, which we built during COVID when I was unable to travel, which was an adventure. But that laboratory is running clinical diagnostic testing using our technology. And we are starting to now really see the impact that we can have, which is incredibly exciting, I think, for all of us, particularly those involved in the early stages of the company, because there is a big, I guess, culture within the organization that everything we're doing is ultimately for the benefit of the patient. And seeing that now come to fruition is incredibly rewarding.
So tell us about the capital raising efforts, because you guys have raised quite a bit of money. How much capital have you guys raised to date, and what has been the journey of going through raising, you know, that money?
So I guess over the last 5 years, we've raised a total of about $60 million. That's been over I guess a very early pre-seed funding that we did when we founded the company, and then three subsequent fundraising rounds. That investment has been raised from a mixture of venture capital funds, private investors, and strategic investors. And I would say, you know, it's not been easy. For me, you know, fundraising is always a challenge. It is, you know, a very busy, noisy space with a lot of companies essentially all doing the same thing. So I'd say the really important thing for us has been, how do we clearly communicate how we're different? And that's something that I think we're getting increasingly good at now, is positioning our company and our technology against a lot of other companies who are all basically doing the same thing as each other. And we are absolutely very different. And that's important that that's very clearly communicated. So we've raised, though, that $60 million. The industry we operate in is still, as in my former company, quite capital intensive. But actually, we've been very careful with the way we've used our funds. So typically, in our sector, companies raise at least $100 million before they enter commercialization. We've managed to do that on significantly less. We actually launched our first product at the end of last year, and we had raised about $40 million by that point. And with that investment, we had built the technology, we had built our first products, we built our clinical diagnostic lab, we built all of our manufacturing processes, we built the commercial team needed for launch of the product. And we also put quite a lot of resource into working with some of the leading cancer centers and healthcare providers in the United States to generate data and demonstrate the impact of the technology that we've been developing. And that's been very exciting for us. And actually, a lot of the data from those studies is going to be published in the very near future.
So let's talk about the vision, because the vision is a really big deal, something that obviously investors invest on. You know, now that you have over 70 employees, you know, same thing, as well as customers, no? If you were to go to sleep tonight, Barney, and you wake up in a world where the vision of Biofidelity is fully realized, what does that world look like?
So for me, that looks like a world in which every patient who's diagnosed with cancer can benefit from life-saving genomic insights. So where everyone, regardless of their social background, their economic background, their geography, can feel the impacts of modern medicine. Because we see on a regular basis now, we see even in the mainstream media, news articles about revolutionary new cancer treatments. And what's hidden in those articles, in that news, is just how few patients actually feel the benefits. So ultimately, you know, what I would wake up to would be a world where people with cancer are able to live longer and happier lives, and yeah, feel the benefits of all these fantastic advances that we hear about.
So I know that you guys are also a very purpose-driven company. So talk to us about this a little bit.
We are, and it forms a big part of, you know, how we even communicate internally with our employees. It forms part of how we hire. It informs how we talk about our technologies and our products. And ultimately, it's what drives all of us. And I would say, for me personally, that's been really important. I mean, building and running a startup company can be an enormous challenge. It can be overwhelming at times. And I would say having a clear purpose is really invaluable to helping you through those challenges. So the purpose, I think, is inherently linked to that vision. And the purpose that's driving everyone at Biofidelity is exactly that. It's to try and improve people's lives, to try and have an impact on clinical practice and on cancer outcomes. And you know, I hear stories on a regular basis from our staff of how they've been personally impacted by cancer. And it's, you know, it's truly inspiring to hear how open our team are with talking about that and what drives them to come into work every day and really deliver, you know, an astonishing effort to develop what we have done and make it a success.
Okay, and let's talk about the past. Let's say I was to put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time to perhaps 2020 or 2019, when you were thinking about taking action here and doing the spin-off. So if you could go back in time and have a chat with that younger Barney, and being able to give that younger Barney one piece of advice before launching a business, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I would say one of the most important things I have learned over the last 5 years is the importance of focus and the importance of doing a small number of things to the highest possible quality. And this is a mistake I think many companies make, is that we build something new and we see this opportunity and we see all of these opportunities presented to us of different routes we could take, different routes to commercialization, different opportunities, and we're tempted to try and grab them all. And if you try and do too much, ultimately you do things at a poor quality and you will fail. And I think we were guilty of that in the early stages of the business. We started to bring in project management processes a few years into the business, and we started to define, you know, what is a project. And we said, well, okay, a project is anything that impacts or involves multiple different functions within the business. And that sounds very simple. So we went through and listed what we're currently doing. And I think we came up with a list of more than 50 projects that we had actively, you know, underway within the organization. And we had fewer than 40 staff at the time. And that's crazy. You know, you can't effectively run a business when your team are spread that thin. So I would say that the biggest piece of advice I would give to my younger self is focus down, make sure you understand what is actually most important, and really put all of your resources behind that. And if you do that and you deliver to high quality, then that's the route to success.
I guess from you too, no? Like having a technical background and I guess, you know, like coming from like the real operational role where you were at the last company at Base4, what do you think, you know, has been for you too, like being able to grow with the business over these years and more on the business side of things, on the strategy, on the execution, more from a CEO role, which has been the first time really for you taking this role on?
It has, and that's been an enormous kind of development for me. And I would say that the most important thing for me has been, or the most important rule I have lived by has been no ego. So I am very, very aware of where the gaps are in my expertise, my experience, and my knowledge. And I have worked incredibly hard to find really top quality people who will come and work with us, work for us, and fill those gaps, and who I can learn from. And so I think if you're open to that, then that gives you personally the opportunity to really grow with the organization and develop. And as I said, I think a little bit earlier, I get bored if I'm not learning. And what I really want is to be exposed to all these new areas and to learn, you know, what does it take to build an effective commercial operation? What does it take to build a clinical laboratory? You know, what does it take to do all of these things successfully? And I have surrounded myself with the best people who embody our values of openness and humanity and really, you know, work incredibly closely together. And so we all learn from each other on a daily basis. And it is, I guess, slightly unusual for a scientific, technical or operational founder to still be in role after 5.5 years. And I think the reason why that has happened is because I've been very open on this, and I'm very open with my board and my investors about what we need as an organization and where I do need support.
This is amazing, Barney. So for the people that are listening, I would love to reach out and say hi. What is the best way for them to do so?
So I'm always accessible by email. I think probably the best way to contact me would be over LinkedIn. I'm very responsive. And I really enjoy the opportunity to connect with people in space and to share our experiences.
Amazing. Well, Barney, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today with us. It has been an absolute honor.
Thank you, Alejandro.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.